Have you ever noticed how history is full of figures who, you know, they do things that seem right at first glance, but then you kind of step back and you're like, was that really the best way to handle that?
Yeah, it's like this gray area of morality, right? Especially when we're looking back through the lens of a totally different time and culture.
Exactly. And today, we're diving deep into one of those figures, Jehu, from the Book of Kings.
Oh, Jehu. Now there's a character.
He was tasked by God with, well, basically wiping out Baal worship in the kingdom of Israel. And our main source for this deep dive is a lecture by Dr. John Oswalt, who you might know. He's a pretty well-known Old Testament scholar.
A brilliant guy. I've read a lot of his work.
So to set the stage a little bit, the kingdom of Israel at this point in time was, well, let's just say, not exactly the poster child for righteousness.
Oh, absolutely not. It was a time of deep crisis, real turmoil. The leadership was corrupt. The people had strayed so far from their God, Yahweh. They were embracing the Canaanite god Baal instead.
It was a mess, from what I understand.
Yeah, a real mess. Dr. Oswalt, in his lecture, he paints this really vivid picture of just the social and moral decay that had set in.
So enter Jehu, stage right.
Yeah.
Anointed by God to be king and to, I guess you could say, clean house.
Yeah, to set things straight.
But as we're going to see, his methods are, well, how should we put this? A bit intense.
That's a delicate way of saying it. You see, Dr. Oswalt really emphasizes how cunning and decisive Jehu was. This wasn't just some, you know, half-hearted attempt at reform.
Right.
He didn't just issue a decree against Baal worship. No, he comes up with this elaborate, almost Machiavellian plan to draw the Baal worshippers into a trap.
Interesting. So he's not just cracking down, he's strategically outsmarting them.
Exactly. So he announces this massive sacrifice to Baal, a huge celebration, and declares that anyone who doesn't show up is going to be executed.
Wow. Talk about high stakes.
So naturally, the entire town shows up. They think they're participating in this big religious festival, completely oblivious to what Jehu has in store.
This doesn't sound good.
It's not. He stations 80 armed men outside the temple. Their orders. Kill anyone who tries to escape. Inside, well, it's a massacre. Not only are the worshippers killed, but the temple itself is demolished, the sacred stone is burned, and the whole site is desecrated. Dr. Oswalt actually uses the word latrine to describe what Jehu turns it into.
Okay, so we're talking about sending a really strong message here.
Oh, absolutely. But here's where it gets even more interesting. Dr. Oswalt goes on to explain the thinking behind these, well, let's call them extreme actions. He argues that it wasn't just about punishing the worshippers, it was about something much bigger.
Okay, I'm intrigued. What was it about then?
He talks about the need for total eradication. He uses this powerful analogy. He says, imagine a pile of pennies contaminated with some deadly virus, right? Just one penny left behind, that's all it takes to reinfect the entire pile.
Okay, I see where he's going with this. So in this analogy, the pennies represent what exactly?
Well, Dr. Oswalt doesn't explicitly define it for us, but he uses the analogy to talk about idolatry, or anything that pulls us away from a true connection with God.
So it's not just about the obvious idols, the golden statues and whatnot. He's talking about anything that takes our focus off of God.
Exactly. He's challenging us to think about what those pennies might be in our own lives. Those seemingly small things, maybe it's a bad habit, a negative thought pattern, or something we cling to, even though it's ultimately harmful.
It's a really thought-provoking image. Like, even those little things, those little compromises, they can have a ripple effect on our spiritual lives.
Precisely. Dr. Oswalt is suggesting that Jehu, in his, let's say, radical actions, he understood how insidious idolatry can be. He knew that even a small remnant could eventually lead back to the same problems they were trying to escape.
So it's about uprooting the problem, not just trimming it back, right? But making sure there's nothing left to regrow from.
Exactly.
But here's where things get a little bit more complicated, right? Because Jehu doesn't exactly follow this principle consistently.
Yes, the plot thickens.
So we're talking about this idea of uprooting the problem, not just trimming it back, making sure there's nothing left to regrow from.
Right.
But this is where things get a little more complicated, because Jehu doesn't exactly follow this principle all the way, does he?
That's right. It's like he only takes it so far.
He goes to these crazy lengths to wipe out Baal worship. I mean, we're talking mass executions, destroying temples, the whole nine yards.
Yeah.
But there was another form of idolatry that was pretty common in Israel at that time.
Right. The golden calves.
The golden calves, exactly. Introduced way back by the first king, Jeroboam.
Yeah.
And these calves, they were supposed to represent Yahweh, you know, the God of Israel.
Right. But still, they were idols.
And Jehu,
yeah,
he just leaves them alone. He doesn't touch them.
Yeah. It's really interesting.
That's like, wait a minute. On the one hand, you're wiping out an entire religious practice. You're not messing around.
Not at all.
But on the other hand, these other idols, they get a free pass.
So how do we make sense of that?
Right. How do we square that circle? What does Dr. Oswald say about this?
Well, he suggests that maybe Jehu was more concerned with outward appearances than a genuine heart connection with God.
Ah, so it's like he's checking off boxes, but he's not really getting it.
Kind of, yeah. Dr. Oswald points to a passage in Deuteronomy. It talks about serving God with all your heart and all your soul.
I think I remember that one.
And he seems to be implying that Jehu might have been missing that wholehearted devotion.
So it's not enough just to do the right things. It's got to come from the right place, too.
Exactly.
It's like, imagine a student who just memorizes all the answers for a test, but doesn't really understand the material.
Perfect analogy.
They might pass the test, but they're not really learning anything.
And that's kind of what Dr. Oswald thinks was going on with Jehu. It's like, okay, you got rid of Baal worship, check. But maybe God was looking for something more.
Like a deeper understanding, a real change of heart.
Exactly.
And this is where Dr. Oswald brings up that line about living in the smile of God's eyes. It really struck me.
Oh, yeah. That's a powerful image.
Because it's not about fear or obligation.
Right.
It's about this desire to please God because you love him, because you want to be close to him.
It's a completely different motivation.
And I wonder if that's what was missing with Jehu.
That's a really good question. And it leads us to another question that Dr. Oswald kind of hints at, but doesn't really answer directly.
Oh, what's that?
He points out that nowhere in the Bible does it actually say that God commanded Jehu to destroy those golden calves.
Wait.
Seriously? You'd think if it was such a big deal, God would have been very clear about it.
Right. So what's the deal with that?
Well, Dr. Oswald doesn't give us a definitive answer, but he seems to be suggesting that maybe, just maybe, God was testing Jehu.
Testing him? How so?
Well, think about it. God gives Jehu this very specific task. Get rid of Baal worship.
Which he does.
He does, meticulously, no questions asked. But then there are these other idols just sitting there.
Right, the golden calves.
So maybe, and this is just speculation, maybe God was waiting to see what Jehu would do.
If he would take the initiative.
Yeah. Like, would he go beyond just the letter of the law? Would he show that he really understood the heart of God, the principle behind it all?
Hmm. That's really interesting.
And the fact that Jehu doesn't do anything about those golden calves, well, it kind of suggests that he might have been missing something.
Like, he wasn't operating on that deeper level.
Yeah, maybe. It's a really subtle point that Dr. Oswald makes, but I think it's really important.
Because it's not just about obedience versus disobedience, right? It's about why we do what we do, what's driving us.
Absolutely. And it's about the depth of our relationship with God. It's about the depth of our relationship with God.
It makes you think, doesn't it?
Yeah.
About whether we're just going through the motions or really trying to understand what God wants from us.
Yeah. And it goes back to that whole thing about the golden calves.
Right.
Like Jehu was so focused on getting rid of Baal worship, which, okay, that was huge.
But he totally missed or maybe ignored this other form of idolatry that was, you know, right there in front of him.
And that's what makes me think there's this big difference between just doing what you're told and really, truly getting the heart of God.
It's like you could follow a recipe perfectly, right? But if you don't understand the why behind each step, you might end up with a dish that's technically correct, but kind of bland.
Oh, I like that. Yeah, like you followed the letter of the law, but you missed the spirit of it.
Exactly. And I think that's what Dr. Oswald is getting at with this whole thing about living in the smile of God's eyes. It's not just about checking off boxes. It's about wanting to please God because you love him, not because you're scared of what will happen if you don't.
It's about a relationship, not a transaction.
Right.
Yeah.
And that takes a lot more work, a lot more introspection. It's easier to just follow the rules, you know.
Way easier.
But I think Dr. Oswald is challenging us to go deeper than that. To look at our own lives and ask ourselves those tough questions. What are my golden calves? What am I holding on to that might be hindering my relationship with God?
And those are hard questions, man. No easy answers.
Nope. And that's why I think this whole deep dive into Jehu has been so thought-provoking. Because it's not a simple story with a clear-cut hero and villain.
Not at all.
It's messy. It's complicated. And it forces us to really grapple with what it means to live a life of faith.
To really get what it means to walk with God.
Yeah, to truly understand his heart. And on that note, I'm going to leave you with this one last question. If even a guy like Jehu, who accomplished so much, could miss the mark when it came to understanding God. What does that mean for us? What blind spots do we have? What are we missing? Until next time, keep diving deep.